Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show. This is Mark Poff, your guest host for this crazy and wild Party Friday. I think they're out watching their kid play golf, which is a great thing. Always love going out and playing a little golf myself. So we're going to talk about a bunch of things. I'm going to go through kind of current events, the today's headlines and stuff. Then I'm going to talk about how Kamala Harris should have been the 47th president, not Trump. And we'll talk about that a little bit. And then John St. Augustine, my partner in crime, will be on about 3:30. And we're going to talk about Kohlberger and a case that he was working on up in the mountains and some cool stuff. I like to refer to a lot of this as cops gone wild kind of stuff. But it's more the DAs and law enforcement or judicial system kind of going crazy and stuff. But hey, if you want to call in, I'd love to talk to someone. You know, I always hate to hear myself talk. So you can call in at 888-627-6008. If you're on Zoom, you can raise your hand and hopefully I'll see you. You can put chats over here and I'll spot those while I'm talking and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. But from my standpoint, because I'm not a big expert on political matters, I'll leave that up to Chuck and Julie to talk about some of these state politics. Even though I was an elected official for 12 years, I ran 3 successful campaigns, won every time. I've never lost an election, so I'm pretty proud about that, which is why I'll never run again, because I'd rather be 3-0 than 3-1. But the things that interest me are I always refer to as entertaining me. And there's so much going on. And I really believe still to this point, you know, you hear that old term that Trump is playing chess and they're all playing checkers. I definitely believe that Trump is doing a lot of this like a magician, you know, look at this hand when really something's going on in this hand. He's doing a lot of things that irritate the living daylights out of the left, the liberals, Democrats, whatever. And they're focusing on these things that are stupid, like taking away foreign students from Harvard. I mean, does that really matter? Not much, but everybody's freaking out. And is anybody surprised within a day they got an injunction to stop that? But how can you really stop that? Because think about this. If I was a foreign student and I wanted to go to Columbia or Harvard or some big school, because a lot of it's just big name recognition, as I always say, the best colleges are the ones that are not close. Because when I moved out to Colorado, all of a sudden Ohio State, that's huge. And it's like, well, it really wasn't in Columbus, Ohio. Nobody really cared because that's where all the local kids went. But if you're a foreign student and you can go to Harvard, that's just huge. So if you're looking at going, or if you're in the middle of your second, third year, and you know all this stuff is coming up, and even though a court injunction is saying, hey, you can't stop that now, are you going to do all this paperwork and do all this work to get into Harvard to find out in July or August that the Supreme Court says, no, Trump can do that? And then all of a sudden you're out and you're not going to a college. So this is going to impact Harvard a bunch. And they're going to be impacted. Their credibility's already pretty much shot as it is. So these things are all going on where Trump is trying to even the playing field and trying to get everything. He's trying to get rid of all the corruption and all the things that he can find that he has issues with and trying to level the ship, if you want to call it that. Now, today, again, current events, these are the things I love that just make me laugh. And I'm like, got to see how this is going to play out. So today he announces, look, EU is not treating us well. We're trying to negotiate with the EU and they're not playing well with us. So we're going to focus on the other countries. And then we'll just put a 50% tariff on you guys starting in about 10 days, and we'll just see how that plays out. You know, how did that work out for China and some of these other countries? And this is what I used to always say in law enforcement, whoever gets the first deal gets the best deal. So if there's 4 of you involved in an armed robbery, the first person to roll is going to get the best deal. And it appears that this is going to be the same way when it comes to these tariff discussions. But here's the thing that I think could be very entertaining about the EU. Now, it's made up of 28 countries. So where do those 28 countries rank up against the US? Because they appear to be saying, hey, we're just as big as the US. You know, we'll negotiate from a position of strength. Good luck with that. So if you look at the annual GDP of the United States compared to a lot of these other countries. So obviously the United States is number one by far. It's not even a foot race. They talk about how China's getting close. Okay, they're like within a third or something. But if you were to remove China, so you have the United States, remove China, and then you take the next countries on this planet, it'll take you the next 10, 15 countries to even come close or to match the United States on our GDP. So the EU is not in a position to negotiate with strength. But here's kind of the key that I think. I think if this is all a union busting move from Trump, I think Trump's getting in here and saying, look, the EU is not really negotiating in good faith. And then when you really understand how this is working, a lot of these countries, these 28 countries that make up the EU, some of them don't even know what's going on. The EU is negotiating and they don't know what's happening. So that here you have this country that could be heavily impacted by the EU decision in negotiating with the United States, but this directly impacts that country. I predict, or I think there's a good chance that some of these countries are going to say, I'm out. Now, obviously getting out of the EU, Brexit, or this could be Francic or Italy, whatever. I can't say all these things. But notice how just a couple weeks ago, the prime minister of Italy was here to meet one-on-one with Trump. So is Italy really going to allow their future in trade to be decided by an EU union that doesn't even give them a fair representation? I really think that some of these, this could be like a union buster, the union, you know, the European union buster, to where some of these countries are like, wait a minute, you don't have our best interest in mind. We want to cut a deal with the United States and we want to do it before you so we can get a better deal. And we want to deal with every country. And I get the feeling that Donald Trump doesn't like the EU. And this is a method to try to, you know, break that up. And this is the way I look at it. It's kind of like when I was on a school board. Don't know how I can equate school board with the EU. But the bottom line is the reason we have all these local school boards is for local control and local representation. So a local school district can take care of the needs of their community. It's hard for somebody in Colorado to make decisions for a bunch of school kids in Detroit. That's why you have a school board in Detroit, which is not doing a very good job. But that's why you have local control, local representation. When you hand something over that has something this huge for your country, like Germany, who has a pretty big GDP, why would they let the EU negotiate for them a deal with the United States? That's crazy. So I get the feeling that this could really shuffle up the whole table, if you want to call it, when it comes to the EU, where a country like Italy is going to say, wait a minute, time out. You know, you're out. We'll send our own guys to the US to negotiate for Italy. Definitely could see Germany doing that, saying, you know, we're done. You know, we're going to do this on our own. And if Germany does that, which is, I believe, the largest one in the EU, the game's over. And then we'll start negotiating with each country, and the EU is just inept. You know, so I find that very interesting. I want to see where this plays out. The market like kind of did this little dip, and then I think they kind of realized, how does this impact us? And the market kind of came back. So another thing that really interests me, and this is something a little more serious that kind of gets me, being a retired detective and working on numerous homicides. So there was this Jewish couple. I say Jewish, I hope that's okay to describe them, murdered in D.C. One was from Israel. The other was from Kansas. but she was Jewish. And they were at this event. And then when they walk out of the event, they're gunned down in cold blood. I mean, there's just no other term for it. She's trying to crawl away, and he goes over and assassinates her. I mean, it is what it is. And this is kind of my concerns. Obviously, I have concerns about any random, well, any act of violence is unacceptable. But I always used to say as a detective that your random act of violence is the hardest thing to solve. But this guy wanted to get caught. I mean, this guy has mental illness and he's been radicalized. And people need to understand how easy it is to radicalize mentally ill people, weak-minded people. And people who go to these Palestinian rallies are weak-minded people. Republicans or conservatives are not interested into stupid stuff like this because it has nothing to do with them other than saying, knock it off and get back to work. I don't have time for this kind of stuff because I'm busy. I'm working. I've got a life to live. I've got a family to take care of. But so you have this event and this individual, Elias Rodriguez, a good Arab name, not. It's a Hispanic name. So why is this guy all worried, a last name of Rodriguez in Palestine or in Gaza? And how does that affect him in Chicago or the United States? Bottom line is he has mental illness and he's been radicalized. So here's my point about this, though. I mean, this is a very unfortunate event. And I've said this before. I thought we were past this in America. And it's funny because it's not the conservatives. Where's all the white supremacists? Where's all the issues with the white supremacists? I don't hear anything there. The only issues we have are radicalized left-wing loons who are protesting things, you know, and it's funny because all the LGBT whatever community protesting for Gaza, if they went to Gaza, they'd kill them immediately because that's what they think of them. So these people are stupid. But so if you were to say to somebody, you know, did you hear what happened to that young couple in Washington, D.C. yesterday? And then see what somebody says to you. If they say, yes, that was tragic that they were gunned down, you know, like that. It just that should never happen in America. That exactly. That's what I would say. It should never happen in America, ever. What if you get a response like, well, what did you expect to happen? Well, I expect for people to be able to walk the streets safely without having to worry about their health, their livelihood, because we should be a safe country where people respect everyone else's lifestyle. It's kind of like live and let live. But when you hear somebody say, you know, well, what did you expect to happen? They're almost trying to justify a homicide, is saying, well, geez, they were Jews. What did you expect to happen? What? And see, here's the key. The individual, this radicalized, mentally ill person over Gaza and Palestine murdered two Jews, but that wasn't his beef. His beef should have been with Israel. So if he really wanted to have a beef with the people that he theorizes or he believes are causing problems in Gaza, he should be going to Israel and going after Israelis. It should have nothing to do with Jewish heritage. I'm German. I have German heritage. Should someone come after me because of Nazis? Well, I would think that would be pretty crazy because my family was here in the United States during World War II. But it's that crazy. You don't go after a race because if you want to say things about Israel that you don't like how they're handling Gaza, freedom of speech, like we always say. But when you find this individual who obviously was just looking to kill Jews, not Israelis, then you know where the real issues come from, that these people have been radicalized. This stuff that we see going on, and I predict this is just the beginning. This is not about Israel. This is about Jews. You know, this is anti-Semite. I mean, that's what it's all about. And like I said, I thought we were past this in this country, but these are not conservatives. These are liberal far lefts that have this ideology that they're against a particular race. And they're the ones who are supposedly all talking about getting rid of racism. But yet they're the ones that are actively bringing this out in New York City and everywhere, protesting against basically the Jewish people wherever they might live. Because I guarantee you those two individuals in Washington, D.C. had nothing to do with what happened in Gaza. But yet he felt energized, radicalized, because he's weak-minded and mentally ill, which is the rest of these protesters, to go do this. So let's talk about somebody somewhat in authority. Let's talk about Elizabeth Warren. So a while back, we had the healthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, gunned down. I believe it was New York City, if I remember right. I should know what city it was in. And she was asked about this. And she made some very interesting responses that should have, I mean, she should have made herself, that should never happen in the United States. That should never happen in the United States, period. Period. It shouldn't matter that he was a healthcare CEO. We've all had our issues. I needed an artificial disc. I mean, that's what my surgeon told me. You need an artificial disc. And I went back and forth with my healthcare for about 2-3 months. And I couldn't hardly use my left arm because of a pinched nerve. And I finally got my artificial disc. But at no point in my mind did it say, where do you live? Where's your CEO at? You know, that never entered my mind. And yes, I had some issues with healthcare. I still have issues with healthcare. It's not a perfect system. Don't like it. But I never thought in my mind, who do I kill? I mean, that just doesn't come into my mind. So here's what Elizabeth Warren, some of her quotes. The visceral response from people across this country who feel cheated, ripped off, and threatened by the vile practices of their insurance companies should be a warning to everyone in the healthcare system. So after the CEO gets assassinated, Elizabeth Warren, a senator from Massachusetts, says this should be a warning to everyone in the healthcare system. What the hell? And then she says this, violence is never an answer. I love it. But, so she had to add the but people can be pushed only so far. So violence is authorized. There is a scenario where you can do violence, but people can be pushed only so far. She's trying to justify a homicide. All right, so let's get the whole phrase that Elizabeth Warren said. And they always talk about how it's the Republicans and the conservatives that are setting people up to go, I don't see anybody going out and doing this. This is a warning that if you push people hard enough, they lose faith in the ability of their government to make change, lose faith in the ability of the people who are providing the health care to make change, and start to take matters into their own hands in ways that will ultimately be a threat to everyone. It almost sounds to me like she's saying, you know, why are you surprised? You know, what did you expect to happen? Because these Republicans are doing these things we don't like, they're the ones that are going to be causing all this harm. So they're the ones that are saying that you're basically radicalizing these people, these weak-minded, mentally ill people, and you're justifying them to go out and kill people. And then a former Biden administrator individual said that this whole free Palestine, this whole argument of free Palestine, she said on CNN that is a slogan for call of violence, that it's reached that point that when people talk about that they're saying, yes, we need to go do something. Why would anybody in the United States hurt other Americans for something that's happening in Gaza or in Israel? Again, sound mind people would never put those things together. But you have these radical left-wing Democrats, Elizabeth Warren, that are justifying murdering people on the street by their statements, and they can't help themselves. So if you've run across someone and they're, you know, and you're like, yeah, do you hear what happened? You know, and they're like, well, what did you expect to happen? That's kind of a clue that person is like, geez, yeah. You know, at some point, we got to get violent. We got to start killing people. So another current event thing that I found very interesting was a 72-year-old man was attacked in Florida by a 33-year-old woman at a park. So he's at a park and he's got a MAGA cap on. Now, I don't have a MAGA cap. I don't know. I got hair. So I like to show my hair that I've still got it. but I do occasionally wear caps, but I just don't have a MAGA hat. And I would probably be cautious in where I wore my MAGA cap, probably not up to Boulder. Actually, it'd probably be fun to wear it up in Boulder. That could be entertaining. But you never know what's going to happen now because they've so radicalized these mentally ill people that a red hat that says, "Make America Great Again," what's wrong with that slogan? It doesn't say, kill babies or anything that's like, concerning or anything. It just says, "Make America Great Again." Who cares? If I wore a cap that said Elon Musk, I think people would come after me. It's like, who cares? So this 72-year-old man sitting in a park with a MAGA hat on. So this 33-year-old woman walked over and just basically asked him, "Why do you support Trump?" Sounds like a simple enough question. Why do you support Trump? Well, it appears that he gave her a really good answer because it pissed her off. And she ended up pouring a can of soda on the guy, throwing the can at him, and attacked him. And then the cops got involved. She ran from the cops, jumped a fence to get away from the cops. Of course, when you run from the cops, they tend to catch you. And then she ended up actively resisting from law enforcement. So, to put it mildly, this individual walked up to an older gentleman and asked him, "Why do you support Donald Trump?" And then when he answered, she went batshit crazy, which she was before, but she went batshit crazy. And that's the problem. You can't have a conversation with these people. You can't say, "Can we sit down and just have a conversation, like Charlie Kirk? Can we just have a conversation and talk and understand and try to, to figure these things out?" No, they've been radicalized. They're weak-minded, mentally ill people that can't just say, "Well, I guess we agree to disagree," and walk away. "I don't like Trump. I don't support Trump." I think if she'd have said that to him, "Well, I just don't support Trump for whatever reason," he'd be like, "Okay. See you later," but instead she had to go batshit crazy and get herself arrested. So I find that interesting, and I hope I get more information about how that plays out, that these people are crazy. So a couple things, more things that are going on with current events today. The judge, and I've obviously testified within so many judges during my days, testified and stuff, and most judges are just completely awesome. But this one judge up in Wisconsin, Hannah Dugan, this is so entertaining for me, having been a cop for many years and now as a consultant working on criminal cases and interacting with a lot of judges and court employees and stuff. This is amazing. And they just released the video. She's done. She's done. I mean, you know how they say a picture says 1,000 words? Well, video is probably 1,000,000. It is so obvious from that video. You got to watch this video if you can get out. I think Fox has it on their website. When she finds out there's ICE agents or law enforcement out in the hallway, it's her courtroom. It is not her hallway. Okay. They're out in the hallway just hanging out there, waiting for this guy to walk out. And it's no big deal. Finish up your hearing. When you come out, we'll arrest you. No big deal. She comes out and confronts them, and not some of them, all of them. And she tells them all to go see the chief judge. And you can actually see when she's looking around, "Hey, did I get them all? Let's get them all out of here." And then she goes back in her courtroom and sneaks the guy out. Well, she didn't find every or didn't get every officer. There was an ICE agent that, and the thing is they're so dressed down. When you watch this video, you're like, "Dude, those are cops?" Well, it's kind of the key. You don't wear a Hawaiian shirt, to blend in. You dress like everybody else, and that's what they do. And they dress based on how people are dressing of that day. So they look like construction workers, to be honest with you. I was kind of actually amazed how low profile they seemed. Well, one of them didn't leave. I mean, she basically said, "You leave, you leave." So she was obstructing their ability to arrest this guy, which is a felony. And then she goes back in the courtroom to sneak him out. Well, the one just hanging out there, and he happens to see him, and he's like, "Whoa, whoa." So you see him starting to follow him, and he's on his cell phone. He's calling his buddy saying, "Guys, we've been duped. This judge has just duped us. She got rid of you guys, and now she's sneaking the guy out through another exit. We got to, everybody come running." And then you see the video of them actually outside. She made it dangerous on them. If they'd have taken him down in the courthouse, no weapons. You can't get in a courthouse with weapons. It's the safest place to arrest someone. And here's another interesting point. The mass majority of arrests in this country are made in the courthouse. Think about it. You know, remand him into custody. So they come to their hearing and then they're arrested. That there's a lot of arrests that go on at the courthouse and it's very safe. But instead, they had to chase this guy for a block. And you can actually see it in the video where they're chasing him. All because she decided to obstruct law enforcement. And basically, I think they could have found more charges for her. I think she's done. I think this is just automatic. I think it's obviously a crime. And I think her career's over. So she's going to lose her career as a judge over someone who was basically abusive and an illegal alien. Well done. So even a judge can be mentally weak and mentally unstable and mentally ill. And she is. I will tell you, she's weak. She's been radicalized by the left. Radicalized so bad that she was willing to break federal law for some lawless illegal alien who snuck back into the country and her life's over. So who are these people? Again, this reminds me of Conan the Barbarian, if you ever watched the old movie, where James Earl Jones was said, let me show you real power. It's not steel. And then he waves to this young lady and she jumps off a cliff. That's power. When you can get people to sacrifice themselves for you and you don't have to do anything, you just sit back and, hey, jump. And they jump to their death, which is what the judge has done. It's what this Elias Rodriguez has done. These people, their lives are over because they were radicalized by the far left, these weak-minded, mentally ill individuals. My personal favorite now, Congresswoman McIvers. And I can't help myself. I'm sorry. Maybe, you know, hopefully Chuck and Julie won't get upset. She's a dumbass. She is a complete and total dumbass. And I can't help myself by saying this. So she's going to go, her and her congressperson buddy and the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, are going to go to this ICE facility. That's fine. Go to the ICE facility. Have a good time. Protest. You know, and then she's trying to play this off. Well, I came there for completely honest reasons to do an inspection of that facility. Well, I got news for you. I can legally go to a bank and go into a bank and do legal transactions and be legal the whole time and nothing's going to happen. But if I go into a bank and start waving a gun around or I start hitting people or attacking law enforcement at the bank or whatever, it's no longer a lawful entry to the bank. So she's trying to say, I was just doing my congressional oversight to go to this ICE location and do an impromptu inspection. Fine. Go knock on the front door and say, hey, I'm Congresswoman McIvers. We would like to come in and look around during an inspection, blah, 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 blah. Again, the video dooms her. She's a dumbass. She is hitting cops. She is pushing cops, body slamming cops. You can see it in the video. You can see her lift her fist and hit law enforcement officers. You can't do that. That is an assault. So she has been charged rightfully. The video is awesome. All I got to do is show the jury the video. It's not going to get to that. They're going to solve it just like with the judge. She'll give up her judgeship and she'll go away. McIvers, I don't know what's going to happen with her. And then the minority leader in the House, Hakeem Jeffries, that's a red line. You're going to cross the red. Oh, cut me a break. You're as dumb as she is. There's nothing you can do. It's a federal crime. Good luck with that. It's just not going to work out well for you or for her. She crossed the line. She did what she did. She deserves everything. All right. So I promised you this on Wednesday, my little teaser. Why should Kamala Harris have been the 47th president and not Donald Trump? I got my list. A lot of interesting facts. I see that John has joined. Give me 2 minutes, John. We'll be ready for you and we can talk about something interesting as opposed to this. So my facts supporting why Kamala Harris should have been the 47th president and not Donald Trump. She was the current VP when Biden was no longer qualified to be president. We know that to be a fact. They should have done the 25th Amendment. It should have been the first time that the 25th Amendment was invoked. In fact, it never should have been invoked because Joe Biden should have said, Joe, you've lost it. You need to resign. We need to get you someplace safe. We need to take care of you where you can get good care and get taken care of. We need to get you to a doctor, maybe do a PSA test. That would have been a good idea 2 or 3 years ago. But instead, Joe Biden, and sponsored by his son, Hunter Biden, who wants the power, I heard he was in the Oval Office at the end more than Joe Biden, and that Hunter Biden was basically calling the shots like the chief of staff. What? This craziness should have been offset. Joe Biden should have stepped in and said, Joe, you need to resign. And Kamala Harris should have been the 47th president. It's obvious by about midterms that Biden was not calling the shots. We know he wasn't calling the shots. The problem is the Democrat organization, the power structure, whoever, whether you think it's Obama or whoever, they were more concerned about Kamala Harris than the Republicans. Because if Kamala Harris had been the president going into this last election, she would not have run for election. They would have primaried the crap out of her. She would not have been their choice because they would have seen her for a year or two and said, oh, hell no, we're not going with Kamala. The only reason they went with Kamala Harris this last time is because it was the only person that could take the money that Joe Biden had, all that money, as it turns out, have been better spent elsewhere. Here's a point that I thought was very interesting. This is the last point. Did you know that the communications person for Kamala Harris always maintained a list of close by federal judges to swear in Kamala Harris as quickly as possible if Joe Biden passed suddenly? Even when she was traveling, wherever she was, she every night they wanted to know who was the closest federal judge. And this is interesting. They wanted a judge that was appointed by a Republican, but not Donald Trump, because they thought that would give more credibility. They did. They were afraid. I don't think they're really afraid. They wanted to get her in office as quickly as possible and transition of power as quickly as possible before anybody really knew what was going on. But no, it wouldn't have mattered. But the point was, all these people are saying, and you hear all this video of Kamala Harris saying, he's as sharp as he's ever been. So why did you maintain a list of federal judges to swear you in if Biden died any given night? Why did you do that? Because you knew that he could die any night. It's just that it didn't happen. And I'm sure she was hoping and praying that he did pass away, you know, about 6 or 8 months ago, probably a year ago, so she could become president, but it didn't happen. So that's my argument. She should have been 47. Trump should have been 48. So that would have been cool. 45 and 48. I don't know if that's any cooler. I don't think it would have been a great thing if Kamala Harris had actually run this country for a year or two. That could have been disastrous. But if the right thing had happened, and Jill Biden, who should be charged with elder abuse, as far as I'm concerned, and Hunter Biden as well, they drove him into the ground. And why isn't anybody close to him saying, hey, Joe, let's go get a PSA test. Let's go get this checked out. Let's go see what's going on. I think there's a good chance we're going to find out that he's been taking treatment for prostate cancer for a while, and that this is all bogus, that they're lying to us again. So enough of the politics. I've spent over half of the time talking about all the stuff that interests me. We'll see how all this stuff turns out and stuff. So John's here now. We can bring him on. Thomas, if you can throw him in the ring here, and we'll start. There he is. I see him. So John St. Augustine, the best investigator on the planet that I've ever met in my life. Worked on numerous.
You haven't met very many people, obviously.
But John and I have worked on a whole bunch of homicides together and stuff. We still work on some cases together. We always collaborate together on cases and have a great time. So I wanted to talk a little bit to start this off about Kohlberger up in Idaho. I did watch I think it was Dateline last night. Very interesting. I actually find those cop shows to be pretty boring now because I lived it for so many years that I'm like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But so the judge is pissed off over Dateline because it's going to be hard to get a jury.
Right.
Because I think one of the first things they're going to ask, and again, just for those who don't know, I don't know how you can't know about this. Kohlberger is the one being accused of killing the four college students up in Idaho a year or so. Well, it's been a couple years ago now, I believe. But they're getting ready to go into trial at the end of July or early August. And then all of a sudden, Dateline comes out and says they talk about cell phone records, they have video surveillance stuff, they have all this information. And now it's out there. So if anybody wants to be on a jury, the first question they're probably going to ask them is, did you see the Dateline show? And if they said yes, that could be problematic. So in talking about Kohlberger, is there anything that you find interesting? I mean, we can move on.
No, I mean, the biggest thing there, Mark, is the leak.
Right.
Who's leaking this information? Is it coming as a result of the discovery being provided to the defense? And so to try and control the narrative, right, of not having the trial in that jurisdiction to try and see if they can get a change of venue? Is this something that the prosecution has, because I will tell you, there are plenty of cases out there where, the government behind the scenes is, providing specifics that, and in this case, it's my understanding that there's a gag order in place. So why you would even risk your career or risk the outcome of a case, by disseminating that kind of information to the media is beyond me. But, unfortunately, we see too much of that going on. And there's an ulterior motive behind it. Like I said, is it to try and change the venue to contaminate, right? Like you said, how can you get, excuse me, how can you get a fair jury pool if, everybody's aware of, what is going on through some type of national media, like you said, with Dateline, excuse me. I don't know, all of a sudden I've got this cough, Mark. I think it's my allergies, but, yeah, so I mean, that's going to be an interesting case. There's going to be, there's obviously a big microscope on that case, right? You got four dead college students, and so now the big thing is how do they get justice for the families? And the defense is hiring a lot of people to second guess some things. I think it, I think you were even telling me that, there's a possibility of a secondary killer. That
Right.
maybe it's not
Supposedly
this
they've
Kohlberger.
turned over a list of names to the judge.
Okay.
And I think the judge is not biting on that. Now, we understand, having worked many times for the defense, that it's their job to fight as hard as they can for their client to get the best outcome for their client. And they will submit tons of motions for suppression, and they'll try all kinds of these, what we would refer to as long shot things to see if they can get something to stick. Well, supposedly they did file two or three names, and the judge is like, we're going to seal this because we're not going to let these names out. Supposedly there's a bunch of items that they did not test, like the railing on the building. They actually got some blood and they never tested it.
Okay.
Well, that's bad. That's not good. You
Sure.
should have tested that stuff.
Right.
So, and the defense is going to do whatever they can to deflect from actually focusing on the facts, unless they have a strong factual case.
Well, but if they're actually developing an alternate suspect, they have to disclose who
Right.
the alternate suspect is. So, I mean, and there has to be some evidence to support why they believe there's this alternate suspect. You can't just come up with names,
A name.
right? A
Yeah.
name,
Here's my name.
right? Without any real, explanation about how they may be or should be included as an alternate suspect. But I'm sure what's going to get scrutinized, right? I mean, as with any one of these types of murder cases, it's going to be, the thoroughness of the investigation. What did they do right? What did they do wrong? What did they test? What didn't they test? Why didn't they test the things that maybe should have been tested? I mean, all of that's, and like you said, I mean, part of it could be a strategy to somewhat deflect, but also it could be as to, the credibility of the agency who did the investigation. That's not uncommon.
And that definitely comes into play. I mean,
Right.
there's some agencies that have built a reputation. I would tell you Boulder PD has built a reputation of total incompetence, especially because of the JonBenét case. And that happened, what, 30 years ago? And
Yeah,
it's, yeah, they're still
29
living
years
under
ago,
that.
yeah,
Yep.
almost.
So it's been a long time, and they're still living underneath, that scrutiny of blowing that case. So you definitely want to bring that up. Because a jury's going to come in there with their biases. I mean, it happens. And it may be a very minor bias that I don't like pizza, or it could be something huge. So the lawyers need to try to figure out how they can get their best jury that they think will help them win their case. But you have to convince a jury of all this stuff. And
Do you know, is he being privately represented or is he being represented by a state agency?
I think it's a state agency. I don't think he has a private attorney.
Okay.
But
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, we know these high-profile cases, even when they're being paid for or compensated by the state, they get a lot of experts, and there's a
Oh,
lot
yeah.
of money spent on these high-profile cases because they don't want it to come back around. I mean, that will be very problematic. And they're usually very complicated. I mean, we're talking a quadruple homicide, and you need to prove to the jury that he killed all four.
Right.
So you've got to go through each one methodically. And so there's a lot of work to be done there, on both sides.
I mean, and it's kind of I didn't think it was already going to happen this year. I mean, normally those kinds of trials get delayed years,
Right.
and if you said it's been 2 years,
Hasn't happened
then it
yet.
should, correct. It hasn't happened yet. It very well could be a continuance.
I mean, how many cases have we gone to that they're like, trial starts Monday? There was a homicide trial just here recently, and it's like, oh, it's going to start on Monday. Then he calls me up Monday afternoon and said, Mark, I need you to do some work. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're supposed to be in jury selection. He goes, nope. We got a bombshell right at the beginning of the trial. And then now the trial's been set off for a few more months. So
Well, a murder trial that you and I just were working on here this last month. We were supposed to start trial this last Monday,
right.
and actually, I'm sorry, this coming Tuesday, the day after Memorial Day,
Right.
and it got moved till continued until July. So
So it happens all the time.
it does. Very rarely does it ever happen on the first go around.
So I'm sure there's going to be a lot more things about Kohlberger that we can talk about going forward. I mean, there's a lot of complex issues. The cell phone records, I find it very interesting that the defense expert did an affidavit that said the cell phone records clearly show he wasn't there. And then the prosecution is saying, here's the cell phone records, and it looks like the phone was turned off. Well, okay. If there are no cell phone records, that's not exculpatory. It's not inculpatory, but it doesn't prove guilt or innocence. It's just a fact. We don't have phone records. It's like saying we don't have fingerprints. Oh, so he's guilty. He wore gloves. I mean, it's just kind of silly to say that kind of stuff. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of that.
And what's interesting about that, Mark, I mean, talk about a who's who. The government's expert is somebody that you and I have both gone up against here in Colorado, and the defense's expert is somebody that you've gone up against as well. So it's like,
Know them both.
I mean, it's kind of interesting how even, cases outside the state of Colorado we seem to cross paths with the experts that are involved in those cases.
It is interesting. But
Yeah.
hey, I hear that you have kind of an interesting case. We've got about 10 more minutes. And I think you need to kind of lay this whole thing out so we understand. I've only kind of heard this one time and not even the whole story. So how did
Yes.
you get involved in this case, and what are we talking about?
Sure. So what happened was there was an allegation of a sex assault that happened in the western slope of Colorado here. So in the Glenwood Springs Gunnison area. What happened? I'm sorry, not Gunnison, Glenwood Springs area. What happened was obviously there's an allegation. The defense attorney is concerned because of the way the investigation went. And what I mean by that is, as an example, there were certain places that were visited by the two parties prior to the commission of the crime. And one of the questions he asked was, John, isn't it normal for you to grab surveillance cameras or Ring cameras when there's an allegation that, happened and they're saying that this party was with this party, at this particular location? And I said, well, yes. He goes, would you be surprised that no phones, or excuse me, no surveillance video was captured? I said, I would be surprised. Tell me a little bit about more about the case. Well, what he says is that these two people initially met through Snapchat. And for those that don't know what Snapchat is, it's a social media application that's primarily used by, your essentially your 13 to probably 30-year-old. A lot of them use Snapchat and Instagram, but their primary source of communication is Snapchat. Well, the allegation was based on that these two parties met each other over Snapchat and then decided that the one party was going to pick up the other party. And then they were going to go out and do some things. Well, again, the defense attorney says, John, would it be customary for law enforcement to obtain the Snapchat account to see, to see if there's any evidence there? And I said, absolutely. I go, was there a phone even taken? Were there any mobile devices taken in this? And he goes, no. Would you be surprised by that? I go, I would be. I said, in today's world, I mean, Mark, you and I can attest to this. I don't think there's a single case of recent history where a phone was not, looked at in some way, shape, or form,
Right.
right? Whether you're talking about an organized crime case or a theft case or a major, burglary or armed robbery or you name it, right? Homicide, sex assault, name it, right? Our phones are, we're so dependent on that. Which is why you and I are gainfully employed
Right.
because of that, So the defense attorney says, John, I think there's some major problems in this case. And so, he asked me if I would take a look at it and review the discovery. And for those of you that don't know what discovery is, it's the government is obligated under a thing called Rule 16 to disclose to the defense everything that is part of their investigation, everything. Right, from sexual assault examinations to interviews to items of evidence that were
Body
collected,
cams.
right? Body cams, expert reports, the whole nine yards. So, as I'm reviewing this, Mark, I think I told you this. I'm like, wait, there's some things here that are missing. Like, no phone, there's a reference to some interview that happened where they mention a phone and a party says, hey, the phone will have everything about what is going on as far as these allegations, the issues surrounding these allegations. If you grab the phone, it'll tell you everything about it. He actually says this to a police officer, Mark, on his body-worn camera. Now, here's what the problem is. The case actually developed 3 years prior, and the government discloses this particular information almost 2.5, 3 years later. Well, that's not acceptable.
It's too late.
Right? So what happens is the defense files some motions that there had been some Rule 16 violation, meaning that the government didn't turn over everything in
In a timely fashion.
in a timely fashion in this criminal allegation. And so I ended up testifying twice in this matter. And, at the end of the day, the judge ends up ruling that, as hard as it was for him, because, one of the things that the judge specifically said is that we don't dismiss cases as a sanction against the prosecution, right? When the prosecution does something like doesn't disclose, and we know this, right? Because Linda Stanley was another, an elected official who violated all kinds of Rule 16 violations. And she was subsequently disbarred. So that's typically right. What you would see is some sanction against the agency or the actual prosecutor.
Right.
In this particular case, the judge actually ruled that the case should be dismissed. And he regretfully did it, but he outlined in an almost 30-page report, 30-page ruling, that this case had all kinds of problems. I mean, it went to the extent, Mark, that the prosecutor was sending late night emails to the defense attorney, basically chastising him and saying what a horrible person he was in representing, right, this individual. And what nobody really understands, and this is where, it's becoming more of a problem, and you and I are seeing more of it because now, it's this we work for the bad side, right? The
Dark side.
dark side, right? What the people don't understand is that, you don't understand the significance of a defense attorney until you get in trouble or until you're in this line of work. And a defense attorney's role is to defend you zealously. What they don't understand is that what the prosecutor's role is not to gain convictions, right, so that they can add more stats to their deal. It's they should seek justice. And in
Right.
this particular, remember, this is a sex assault. Here's what's really bad about the whole thing, Mark. The government's expert and the defense's expert agreed that the DNA in this victim's clothing did not represent or was not from the defendant. The defendant's DNA was nowhere there. So if you have a sex assault and you collect somebody's underwear, or you collect, some swabs, right? As you and I know, you will see that that DNA matches the person that we end up
The
arresting. The
perpetrator.
perpetrator, exactly. The defendant, right? The suspect. They knew this, Mark, and they did nothing about it except to continue to try and gain
A
garner
conviction.
a conviction, even though it was not the right thing to do. And the worst part of this, Mark, is this. I think a lot of people think of you and me like, oh, okay, money will buy you whatever you want. And the reality is, I think if anything, what this has done for at least you and I is that it's opened our eyes to the things that are done wrong. And I think, a lot of us put a lot of faith in our government in the hopes that they do the right thing. And the reality is, guess what? They're human. They make
Right.
mistakes as well. And so, right, the problem is that, we have immunity that's given to prosecutors,
Absolute
and
immunity.
this is where the problem lies, right? That they can act with impunity to do whatever they want to whoever they want, and there's no accountability. If you or I mess up, there's a lawsuit, or we get charged
Right.
criminally, right? You can't sue a prosecutor. They have absolute immunity, and that's wrong, especially when you see things like what you and I are seeing. And I know we're short on time, but we can go through case after case after case after case of how people, who have been wronged, there's no accountability. And then, there's the other side of it, right? Like you and I are also brought in on the people that do things that are heinous. And we're asked to review and just ensure that there is accountability of what the government did, that they didn't cut corners, they didn't do things illegally, they did things all, based on best practices and based on the legal end of things, right? Our constitutional rights, right? Was there a search warrant? Was there a waiver, a consent waiver, right? Did they do all the things that were necessary, right, to obtain the information or the evidence that they obtained? And the reality is, you and I are seeing, right? And here's the problem, Mark. And you and I are both educators, right? We teach. I think the biggest problem that I can tell you right now that I foresee, and I've examined this for years, decades, is that, after, a couple months of few months of training, we empower our law enforcement to go out and do things, and we don't give them the training that is necessary, right? We throw some of these guys and ladies into investigations, and they don't even know how to conduct an investigation. I mean, they don't
Right.
even know where to gather evidence, how to gather evidence, the importance of preserving evidence, how to, analyze and interpret it. All of these things that go on, and yet here's the problem. All it takes is a piece of paper to arrest somebody. And once that arrest happens, the damage is done.
Oh, it's done.
We're seeing it. It's happened to me, unfortunately, but we see it with educators, we see it with lawyers, we see it with engineers, we see it with, everyday people who work in, fast food or, Walmart, Target, wherever. right? There's nobody that's doctors, nobody's immune to crime. And the problem is, we make these arrests and nobody's really saying, wait, stop, time out. Let's make sure we're doing the right thing before we go out and violate this person's civil rights by arresting him and then parading him out there and saying that, this guy's a horrible person. Much like what they did in New York with that Mangini or whoever the kid is that is alleged to have killed the UnitedHealth CEO, parading him like we live in
Well,
America.
the infamous perp walk.
Exactly, the perp walk. I think you and I talked about this
And
on here.
once you get a mugshot on the internet, it's never coming back.
That's
And
right.
that's absolutely correct. And I can't tell you the last time that I've had a district attorney say, I reviewed this case. I don't like it, so we're going to no-file it because we don't think it was done properly or whatever, or clean it up before you
That's
make an
right.
arrest.
That's
And
right.
that's what they should do is clean it, see if it can be cleaned up,
Yep.
and be fixed and do a good solid. And I still teach this at the college, and we do need to run. We got about a minute.
Okay.
I still teach this at the college. Just because you have probable cause doesn't mean you have to arrest. When you
Right.
have probable cause, you can lose it. Still do a thorough investigation. And then when you've concluded all of your leads and you still have probable cause, then act upon that.
That's right.
And then you're probably going to be relatively safe and have other people verify your work. But yeah, we could go on forever
You
talking
really
about all these
could.
cases and stuff.
That's
John and I
right.
typically don't get called very much on cases that are, open and shut. We normally get called on cases when a defense attorney is like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right to me. As seasoned investigators, what do you think? And then we can go in and help with that process. So, John, as always, thank you for
Thanks for
coming
having
on
me.
the show here on a Friday afternoon. Hopefully you have a great Memorial Day weekend.
You
I
as
know we're
well. Thank
taking
you.
trips here soon, so that's good. And Chuck and Julie, I think we'll be back Monday on Memorial Day. If not, they'll be back on Wednesday. So everybody have a great Memorial Day weekend. We'll see you later.